Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is the witty and charming Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good. You always say such nice things about me.
Well, I've made a list in advance. Well, what are we talking about today?
We are talking about optimizations, and I think this is a really important episode for our podcast. I mean, they're all important, but this one I think is especially important because, you know, we kind of joke around amongst ourselves, but really optimization is what makes puts the iterative in iterative marketing, and that's actually the title of today's podcast, Marketing Optimizations, Putting the Iterative into Iterative Marketing.
When we talk about optimization, I think that word kind of gets banded around quite a bit in marketing circles. So what are we talking about when we're talking about optimization?
I think that's a great question. And, you know, we're talking about making these incremental improvements over time and really working to identify ways that we can make something better and then taking action to make that happen.
Another key point of optimization is it's incremental improvements, but it's changes that are informed by some sort of data or experimentation or some input gives you more information that allows you to determine whether something is working well or working more poorly and do more of what's working well and do less of what's not.
Exactly. And that's what we as marketers want to do.
So why do we optimize? Why is this so important?
Well, I think if you don't optimize, you are leaving opportunities on the table. And, you know, it's obviously if you have a chance to improve something, you want to do that. And when you look at that exact moment in time, and optimization helps you do that. But it takes it a step further because your optimizations are actually compounding over time. And so when you fail to optimize or you take a program and you set it and forget it, you're not just missing out on that one optimization. You're missing out on all of the future growth that you could have been getting and receiving had you made that change.
Yeah, and I think that compounding thing is key because if you're doing it right, your optimizations can have an impact far into the future. And then any optimizations you make in the future are actually optimizing on top of the optimizations that you've made in the past. And so just like, you know, you probably taught in grade school about interest compounding in a bank account, your incremental improvements, your optimizations of your marketing programs can actually compound over time and add on to each other to the point where you can make amazing gains from where you started in a given program.
Definitely.
I think the other thing that optimizations give you is, marketing is really hard to justify sometimes. Sometimes it's really hard to connect the dots all the way from, you know, we engaged in this activity and the results were these dollars on the other side. Sometimes we can make that leap in a very logical manner. Other times it's a bit fuzzier and sometimes it's impossible to do it all, especially when you've got complex distribution channels in the mix. By doing optimization on an ongoing basis, it gives you something to talk about, something to report up the chain to explain where your efforts are going and how you are continuously improving in the results that you're producing, even if you can't necessarily connect the dots all the way to the other side. So if you're doing optimization, it has the opportunity to essentially kind of make you look good as a marketer.
And that's, you know, what we're looking for. I cannot think of a single study on, you know, talking about marketing and what marketers are focused on and concerned about where showing ROI and showing value is not in at least the top three. And that's me, you know, not wanting to, make up a fact here. I think usually it's in the top one or two. And so this is something that marketers across the country, across the world, really are looking for ways to do. And so to your point, when it's hard to connect the dots, being able to show and report on improvements is another metric that we can show our executive teams and our C-suites and our shareholders that we are adding value to the organization.
And I think it's important when we talk about optimization that we explain that this is more than just A/B testing or conversion rate optimization. I mean, there's certainly other practices out there in marketing that encompass bits and pieces or parts of what we're talking about when we talk about optimization. But this is a little bit more of a holistic, overall continuous improvement of your entire marketing program.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And when we're talking about conversion rate optimization, you know, that specifically, that's the mechanics of what it is that we're trying to do. And a lot of the same principles apply. The difference when you start looking at optimizations is that we put a little bit more thought into the metrics and really finding that way to connect our revenue back to the metric and the metric to the revenue, or maybe I'm not sure how many ways that gets connected, but connecting revenue and metrics is really the main point there. And so that's one of the ways that that really differs.
Yeah, when you're talking about conversion rates, I mean, conversion rates is then, you know, you get people onto a website and then they convert either into a lead or a sale, right? And that's a quantitative thing. We'll talk more about this later, but we take that one step further and we make sure that we're looking at the quality of those conversions. The other way I think that we differ from conversion rate optimization is that within iterative marketing, when we're focused on optimization, we're focused on creating optimizations that are portable, meaning we can take this optimization from where we gleaned that insight, say on a website, and apply it over to another media, whether that's a billboard or a TV commercial or a print piece, someplace that, you know, in and of itself, it's a hard place to do optimizations. We want to create optimizations that can be learned in one medium and then applied elsewhere.
So let's take a second here and talk about some of the must-haves that we need to make our optimization successful. You know, what is it that we need to do before we try to optimize to ensure that we're setting ourselves up for success? I think that there's a couple of different things that we can do, and a lot of these tie into the six components of iterative marketing. The six fundamental truths of iterative marketing. The first being that we really want to be trying to optimize a program that's sustainable and repeatable. It can't be a one-off campaign. And the reason is that we need data to analyze and we need time to analyze that data, as well as time to make the optimizations to see if they're having an impact. And you can't do that with a one-off campaign that's time-boxed. And so keeping true to the fundamental truth of sustainable and repeatable programs.
Yeah, if you tried to do this in a very campaign way, then you by the time you've generated the insights, the optimizations that really make an impact, you're on to the next campaign where they may or may not apply. You may be onto a completely different market segment, you may be onto a completely different audience, and then any optimizations that you made are inapplicable. And so the key is to set something up that you can run as continuously as possible so that those optimizations move from point to point. And I think it's also important when we talk about setting something up that we talk about setting something up as small as possible, because the fewer moving pieces that you have, the fewer moving parts that you have in your marketing program, the easier it is to make those optimizations. And that's not to say that it's not going to get more complicated later, it's not going to get more complex, and that, you know, this tactic over here isn't going to support this other tactic over there. That layering can be done later, but if you delay some of that layering, you have two advantages. One, the optimizations that you make early will now inform the decisions as to which tactics you apply later. You figure out which channels or which content resonates. Those are the channels and content that you expand upon and build upon. And then two, it makes those experiments early in the program where you're still feeling out your KPIs and you're still trying to figure out really what metrics matter and how we're measuring this and making sure that all that stuff is working. It makes that stuff much easier because you don't have all that many moving parts getting in the way of your optimizations.
And I think that leads into kind of the third way to really set yourself up for success. And it comes back to that measurement part. And measurement really needs to be, and feedback really needs to be something that you plan for in advance. It should not be an afterthought. And so you really want to bake that into the planning in terms of what tools are you going to be using? What KPIs are you going to measure and how are you going to measure them? And then also being flexible to kind of adjust that as you move forward.
Yeah, that flexibility is key. And not only do you have to bake in the KPIs and the measurement, but now you also have to bake in the resources to take that data in and analyze it. And so you need to identify who on staff is going to do that, or which one of our partners is going to do that. You need to identify how much resources do you need to set aside for making these optimizations, because if you're optimizing creative, somebody has to produce that creative, and there's going to be a cost, whether internal or external, to do that production. If you don't set aside the money, then you might realize, well, if we do this, that, or the other, we can improve the effectiveness of that campaign twofold, but we don't have the resources for the production, so we can't do that. And that's a horrible position to be in.
So setting aside resources for optimization, both in terms of creative needs and analysis, that's one of, you know, the other things that you definitely want to have in place. And what I think is interesting about each of these that we've now talked about, these four points, is that they all kind of build on each other. You know, they've led into each other very well because they're all connected. And that kind of leads us to the fifth key to success here, and that's setting realistic expectations with your stakeholders.
Yeah, and this is both an important prerequisite and one of the huge benefits that comes out of iterative marketing. If you are doing this sort of iteration and optimization and improvement over time, you need to make sure that your stakeholders understand that that's your goal. That your goal is not to come out of the box and pardon the sports analogy, but hit it out of the park. Your goal is to come out and learn and incrementally improve, and at the end of the day, have a marketing program that would far exceed the possible outcome of something that you had engineered in a vacuum in a box and then just thrown out into the world. But you have to set the expectations with the stakeholders that that's what you're doing. The nice thing is, if they understand that that's what you're doing, then that's what they're going to be looking at your performance against. And so they're going to be looking at you, looking for the insights, looking for the incremental improvement, which is a lot easier to prove than it is that, you know what, we guessed on 15 different things and boom, it managed to produce some great results. Instead, it's we guessed on one or two and here's what we learned and here's how we're improving. A lot easier bar to reach with your stakeholders.
Very valid point.
So I think we're at a good point here for a break. So why don't we talk about how we're going to help some people?
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor. We don't have sponsors for this podcast. Instead of asking you to get a free digital scale or enter some code for 10% off your website, we ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was submitted by one of our anonymous listeners, who asks that you make a donation to Home for Our Troops, an organization dedicated to building mortgage-free, specially adapted homes for severely injured veterans. Learn more at www.hfotusa.org or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We want to support what's important to you.
And we're back. So before the break, we talked about why optimization was important and what you really needed in place before you could optimize. Now we're going to get into the real nitty-gritty of this and talk about how you go about making these optimizations. When we talk about optimizations, there's really two key areas you can make optimizations. One of them is in your creative or the content that you're producing. You can produce better creative that performs better. And two is in the channels or the delivery of that content. You can make optimizations in how you're getting that content to your audience. I think, Elizabeth, it makes sense for us to talk about the content portion first. What do you think?
I think that's a great place to start. And when we talk about content, we talk about creative, and making these optimizations, we want to ensure that our content is resonating within our audience. We want to make sure that we're getting the right message out to the right people. The question is, how do you do that? And I feel kind of like this is the million-dollar question, because this is what marketers are thinking about every single day when they're working with their creative teams. And there's a way that we can do this by identifying some KPIs. And so I'd like to spend the next couple minutes kind of going over some of the different ways that we can measure and optimize our creative and our content and what we can expect from that.
I think it really depends. When you talk about KPIs, it really depends on what type of content you're creating. If we're doing our jobs, we're creating content that really has a, if not a singular, at least a primary focus, right? We create content that tries to accomplish, in general, one of three things. We're either trying to evoke action, or we're trying to persuade or inform an audience about some specific thing, or we're trying to generate an awareness for our brand and taking that one step further, generate some feelings to be associated with our brand so that we can create an emotional connection with our audience. And our KPIs are different for each one. Now, I will say that when we look at optimization, we're usually most focused on the evoking action piece because that's really the easiest to optimize. If we are asking our audience to do something, we can then measure if they did it. Pretty straightforward. When we're asking our audience to learn something or know something, well, it gets a little bit trickier to test. And when we're getting our audience to feel something, that one we haven't figured out yet. But one of these days we'll be able to tap into people's brains directly and extract what they're feeling about stuff. But we've got a ways to go on that.
So in terms of evoking action, you mentioned that this is the easiest to optimize because we're asking them to take a specific action. We're asking them to click on a button. We're asking them to fill out a form. What are some of the KPIs that we can use to measure that specifically?
Usually, when you're defining a KPI, you want to try and get as close to the money as possible. So if you think about it, what are the steps that that person takes? If they click on a form, then if they fill out a form, then that generates a lead, and then that lead ideally converts into a sale. But not all leads are created equal. So you want to make sure that you are measuring both the quantity of leads that that lead form is creating and the quality of those leads. And those two metrics combined are really what gives you a full picture of the revenue that you are adding to creating. The same thing is true with sales. So if you're an e-commerce site, you really want to look at, am I creating sales that add to the lifetime value of those customers, not just short-term sales? Basically it just comes down to quantity and quality.
And then in terms of informing them or changing their perception, what are some of those KPIs that we can really focus on and see if we've moved the needle?
These are usually more assist type actions, right? So if I'm informing or persuading, I'm changing some perception in our buyer's mind. What that's going to do is it's going to reduce friction in the sales process. And so in those instances, we're really looking at things like time to close or close rate. We're looking at sales, the size of a sale or how quickly a cart abandonment rate if you're e-commerce. Those are the type of situations where you can really see whether or not your inform or persuade type of content is being effective.
And then, our third point that we mentioned, evoking a feeling that drives awareness. You mentioned this, but this is one that's almost impossible to optimize on, as it's hard to isolate your brand. It's never, no one's living in a bubble. And so there's other factors that are going on out there, either advertising wise or their own personal interactions or through social media. And so this is one that's very hard to optimize for.
And this kind of leads into the next point, but when you're doing your optimizations, the key is to set up a controlled experiment. We've got a whole podcast coming up here next week on experimentation, so I'm not going to get too deep into it, but you're going to want to set up a group A and a group B that gets two different stimulus, which in this case, if we're talking about content, is two different pieces of content, and then measure the response from group A versus group B, and you want to control all of the other factors. Well, when we start talking about brand and brand content and the feelings that we're trying to evoke, it's really hard to make sure that Group A only gets Group A stuff and Group B only gets Group B stuff because your brand extends far beyond the 30-second spot or the the banner ads that you're putting out there. It extends to word of mouth, and as soon as somebody interacts with the company in any way, shape, or form, that's an extension of your brand as well. And so the controls go out the window. I've heard of brands trying to isolate this by putting two different messages out in two different markets, but then again, you've just thrown out, you've got a horrible lack of control in that, because you've now got two different markets that are going to react very differently. And even if you try and swap it, now one has seen one brand message first, and then they've seen the other one second, it just doesn't work. So brand is very hard to optimize on effectively.
So you touched on experiments, and I know you mentioned we're going to get that into that a little bit more next week. You know, there's one more point I want to make before we kind of move into optimizing our channels, and that is one of the great opportunities that we have with creative and content is that we can test this digitally, but then apply it globally. And it comes back to the point you made earlier about these optimizations being portable. You know, we've got a lot of opportunities within digital media to test through direct response and through some of these other KPIs that we've identified that we don't necessarily have in traditional media. And so by testing this through digital, we can then take those insights and apply them to some of our traditional campaigns like billboards and like TV and like print.
And we'll get more into that next week. But I think the key there is making sure that you're setting up the right experiment. And we'll rail on button color experiments next week. How does that sound?
Wonderful.
I think that pretty well covers it for the creative and content. That's half the battle when it comes to optimization. If you can get the right content, the content that truly resonates, you're halfway there. Now we need to make sure that we're getting it most effectively in front of the right people. And that's where optimizing your channels comes in.
And a lot of this is done through direct response advertising, which, to our point earlier, that brand's a little harder. We can then carry that over to brand advertising as well. But as I mentioned earlier, direct response gives us, those immediate actions that we're able to measure and determine if it worked or not.
Exactly. You have a stimulus and your response. We ask somebody to do something. We measure if they did it. The key when we're looking on a channel is, okay, at what rate did they follow through and do it? Because if we've done our job in crafting good content and content that really resonates with a defined persona or audience, now we know whether we're hitting that audience based on the rate at which they respond. If we are hitting the wrong audience, we'll see right away they aren't clicking on the ad, they aren't converting, or maybe if they are converting, we're getting junk leads or low dollar value sales. So in that case, we've got a miss. We're not hitting the right people. If they are converting at a high rate, they're clicking on our ads at a high rate, they are converting when they get there, and it's good quality conversions, good leads, good sales, good lifetime value, whatever metric we need to do on the quality side, then we know that we're getting the right people at the right time.
And that can then be applied over to that brand advertising that otherwise is very hard to optimize on. If we're able to identify a channel that our direct response ads are evoking responses to, then we can make the assumption, a very educated assumption, that we're in the right channel. And so that's a great place to put our brand advertising as well.
The important thing to note, though, when we're doing this analysis is the key metric, the metric that it, you know, trumps all other metrics, is what was our cost for each one of those actions. So it's really easy to get hung up on what is our click-through rate, what is our conversion rate, et cetera, but that totally takes out of account how much did we pay for that to happen. Because you can find that you have channels that perform really well, they're just not cheap. And you can find that you have channels that perform fairly poorly, but they're so inexpensive that it doesn't matter, because we end up compensating for that just in sheer volume of traffic that we're able to generate, or eyeballs that we're able to get in front of. And so you want to take your cost that you invest in a given channel, and then divide that by the number of actions that you get that are desired actions, and maybe set a quality threshold on those actions. So only sales that are above a certain dollar amount, only leads that the sales department comes back and says are grade A or better or something like that. And then calculate your cost per action. And that is your key metric. That's the metric to beat all metrics.
So we've talked about, why we want to optimize our channels. And we've talked about what it looks like when we're successful, but how do we actually go about optimizing our channels?
there's a couple of different ways you can do this. So I think that when you're looking at direct placements, where we call up publication XYZ and we say that we want to advertise, whether it's print or online or however, there you're really pitting publication against publication. And that kind of gets back to last week where we talked about the difference between buying ad space versus buying an audience. If you're buying the ad space, you're trying to evaluate, is this ad space better than this other ad space? And so there it's an either or scenario. But then if you're buying digitally and you have the ability to target where you're targeting your individual audience, whether it's demographically or behavioral based on third-party data sources of what their interests are, now you have the ability to pit one particular targeting method against another targeting method.
And are there any other ways that we're able to optimize our channels?
Absolutely. The other key things to look at are ad format. So, is the question is, should this be video or should this be text? There's an additional production cost associated with creating an animated banner ad. Is it worth it to create the animated banner ad? Well, let's try it, see what the results are. The key is to have that controlled experiment that we'll talk about next week. And the other key is to make sure that you're using roughly the same creative when you're doing these split tests, because if your message varies wildly from version A to version B, it's not really a fair test. Or if your message varies between publication A and publication B, it's not a fair test either. So you have to be controlling the creative and content and making sure that's the same if you want to be able to analyze which channel is going to produce more value than the other one.
I think those are all great points, and I think have probably given our listeners a couple of ideas of some new ways that they can work to optimize their channels. Before they go off and start trying this on their own, I think there's one point we would really like to share and really hope to make clear to everyone, is that we sometimes fall into this mental trap, and we want to caution you against doing this, and that once you've identified that superior content or that superior channel, for some reason, we have a hard time letting it go. And I've seen this happen over and over again with clients. I know you've seen it happen, Steve. And it's, we had a client a few months back that we actually, had said, this doesn't make sense to be here. And they're like, well, let's just leave it on and see what happens. And we're like, no, this is, you are literally throwing money away. There's nothing here. And they wanted to keep it going because we have a hard time letting go, especially when there may still be people on that channel. And I think you often bring up a good question that we like to ask the clients, is that yes, there are still people on that channel, but is your budget unlimited? Because there's an opportunity cost associated with staying on that channel. And the question is, if I had the same amount of money to spend elsewhere, is there another channel where I can get more bang for my buck?
I don't know. I really don't understand exactly what psychological trigger is here, but I think we're all apt to fall victim to not wanting to lose what we already have. And so if we have a channel that addresses a certain audience, then the idea of taking that channel away, regardless of whether we're going to replace it with something that performs 20% better, 30% better, you're still taking something away. And we have to get past that trap and get over that and realize that it's dead weight. It really is. Even if it's performing, you have an opportunity cost associated with continuing to invest in it, and you need to move your money elsewhere. I think that does it pretty much for this week. Next week, we really, really get into the nitty-gritty of experimentation, which is sort of a prerequisite to doing this optimization, but it made sense to outline the broader optimization first. So I look forward to joining us next week, and until then, have a great week.
Bye. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @iter8ive. Or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman, with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.